38. Our speaker today is Bertrand Comparé of San Diego.
Tonight I thought for something different I'd talk about a particular person. One that we may be seeing one of these days, according to the prophet Malachi. And that's the prophet Elijah. One of the great men of the Bible. Now, he didn't leave a single written word like some of the other prophets. In fact, he didn't do as much talking as they did. He did a lot more acting, and apparently his standing is quite high. To understand Elijah, you've got to know the background, the setting of the times and the place in which he lived. King Solomon had the best start of any of the kings of Israel or Judah, and he finished up as among the very worst. King Solomon's fabled wisdom fizzled out very early. He had an earthy, practical sort of wisdom that served him well in the ordinary administrative tasks of the king. As far as wisdom in the biblical sense is concerned, he was pretty sadly lacking in it. Apparently, at the start, he was given a direct communication from God. And yet he finished up an idol worshiper and a man who was leading the nation into idolatry. You can find few worse. And the kings of Israel and Judah are not a lot that you would admire. Now, upon his death, he was succeeded by his son Rehoboam. Now, of course, the kings, as well as the people of Israel, had been given stern warning by God not to marry these other races around them. King Solomon took wives from these other races, including even the Hittites, in wholesale lots. And his son Rehoboam was actually not entitled to succeed to the throne at all, because he was the son of an Ammonite woman. And a half-breed mongrel of that sort was not, under God's law, eligible to the throne. See 2 Chronicles 12, verse 13. And in Deuteronomy 17, verses 14 and 15, God gave instructions. When thou art come into the land which Yahweh thy God giveth thee, and shalt possess it, and shalt dwell therein, and shalt say, I will set a king over me, like all the nations that are about me, thou shalt in any wise set him king over thee, whom Yahweh thy God shall choose. One from among thy brethren shalt thou set king over thee. Thou mayest not set a stranger over thee, which is not thy brother. Well, you remember the story given briefly but clearly in the Bible. Solomon, in his vanity and folly, had misgoverned the people badly. He taxed them beyond endurance, and not satisfied with that, he set up a system of sort of slavery. The citizens were drafted every so often for several months forced service on the building projects of the king. So, like Nero, who boasted that he found Rome built of brick and left it built of marble, Solomon in his vanity was indulging in a great building program. He spent 7 years building the temple and 13 years building his own palace. So upon his death, when Rehoboam came to the throne, the weary people petitioned him to ease their burdens. Now, he was surrounded by a lot of bright young Jew brain trusters, same as in Washington, D.C. And he asked them for their advice. And they said, well, you show this people who's boss. So, he told them in substance, well, you haven't seen anything yet. If you think my father laid heavy burdens on you, wait till you see what I do. And the result was that the 10 northerly tribes revolted. I say 10 northerly tribes, but as a matter of fact, one of them, Simeon, was the southernmost of them all, south of Judah. But they were so fed up with the intolerable tyranny that they abandoned their territory and went up and lived where they could among the other 9 tribes who were north of the kingdom of Judah. Well, Rehoboam started out trying to crush this revolt by force, but the Bible says that a man of God warned him that this separation was decreed by God and that he must not fight against Israel. Nevertheless, there was a period of on-again, off-again war between Judah and Israel from then on. Now for the northerly kingdom, Jeroboam, a man of the tribe of Ephraim, became its first king and was selected for this by God himself. And if ever there is a supreme example of human folly, this is it. You read it in 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 28 to 39. And the young man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor. And Solomon, seeing the young man that he was industrious, made him ruler over all the charge of the house of Joseph. And it came to pass at that time, when Jeroboam went out of Jerusalem, that the prophet Ahijah, the Shilonite, found him in the way. And he had clad himself in a new garment, and they too were alone in a field. And Ahijah caught the new garment that was on him and tore it into 12 pieces. And he said to Jeroboam, "Take thee 10 pieces, for thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, Behold, I will rend the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon, and I will give 10 tribes to thee, because that they have forsaken me, and have worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Milcom, the god of the children of Ammon, and have not walked in my ways to do that which is right in my eyes, and to keep my statutes and my judgments, as did David his father. And I will take thee, and thou shalt reign according to all that thy soul desireth, and shall be king over Israel. And it shall be, if thou wilt hearken unto all that I command thee, and will walk in my ways, and do that which is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as David my servant did, that I will be with thee, and build thee a sure house, as I built for David, and will give Israel unto thee." Now that's quite a promise to make to a man, isn't it? And you would think that anybody with a little bit of horse sense would be willing to fulfill the conditions, which are not hard. Simply rule the kingdom according to the laws of God in order to claim that promise. Well, this 10-tribe northern kingdom of Israel and the dynasty of Jeroboam on the throne began in 937 B.C. And one of his very first acts was to establish idolatry in the kingdom of Israel. He had 2 golden calves made and set up one at Dan and one at Bethel. He was afraid that if the people went to Jerusalem to worship at the temple, that they might return to their political loyalty to the house of David. And he wasn't willing to trust God to make good on his promise. See 1 Kings 12, verses 26 to 33. So Jeroboam reigned as an evil and idolatrous king for 22 years, from 937 to 915 B.C. See 1 Kings 12, verse 20, to chapter 14, verse 20. So the new kingdom of Israel, the 10-tribe northern kingdom, got off to a bad start. Now Jeroboam's son, Nadab, reigned for 2 years, from 914 to 912 B.C., as king of Israel. And he was as bad a king as his father. That name, Nadab, means liberal, and he lived up to the name. He was killed by a usurper, Baasha, who exterminated the whole family of Jeroboam. At least all the male descendants, killed them all off, and reigned 24 years, from 912 to 888 B.C. See 1 Kings 15, verses 25 to 34. Baasha's son, Elah, was a drunken incompetent. He reigned 2 years and was assassinated by Zimri, one of his army officers. That was 886 B.C. Zimri reigned only 7 days before he in turn was overthrown and assassinated. But in those 7 days, he exterminated Baasha's family, too. Then he was deposed by Omri in 885 B.C. Now, Omri was something like the first Herod, Herod the Great, an able, unscrupulous scoundrel. He built the city of Samaria as the new capital city. It was better located and easier to fortify by its natural location. He thoroughly reorganized the chaotic kingdom with a strong hand. He overcame and killed a rival for the throne, and he became known among all the surrounding pagan nations for his ruthless ability, so that a century and a half later, the Assyrians still referred to the kingdom of Israel as the House of Omri. Now, in 710 B.C., 2 centuries after Omri came to the throne, the prophet Micah complained, "For the statutes of Omri are kept, and all the works of the house of Ahab, and ye walk in their counsels, that I should make thee a desolation." See Micah 6, verse 16. Well, Omri reigned from 885 to 874 B.C., and he was succeeded by his son Ahab, who reigned from 874 to 853 B.C. Now, like Omri, Ahab was a total scoundrel. But unlike Omri, he was also a stupid, incompetent weakling. You have the curious spectacle of a henpecked tyrant. 1 Kings 16, verses 29 to 33 says, "And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of Yahweh above all that were before him. And it came to pass, as if it had been a light thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went and served Baal and worshipped him. And he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal which he had built in Samaria. And Ahab made a grove, and Ahab did more to provoke Yahweh God of Israel to anger than all the kings of Israel that were before him." Now, whereas Ahab was a weakling, Jezebel really ruled the country with a strong hand. And her weakling husband didn't dare stand up to her and say, "No, you can't do this." Whatever she said was to be done, why, that was done. Now, she was a pagan, she was a worshiper of Baal, and presumably a sincere one, since at least she did more to bring about the worship of Baal in the land than most of them. Now, these are the conditions that brought the prophet Elijah into action. Now, his name, in the first place, all these biblical names with the letter J in them are, of course, absurdly mangling the correct pronunciation. The Hebrew alphabet does not contain a letter with the sound of the letter J in the English alphabet. It goes back to the time when, in the early beginnings of the Catholic Church, they were translating the Bible into Latin. And in Latin, in some circumstances at least, the letter J can have the sound of Y. Then, when you have the later translation into English, why, they followed the Latin spelling that they found. Now, remember that while in Germany and the Scandinavian countries, the Reformation under Martin Luther was one based on actual principle. The Reformation in England was based on nothing more noble than the desire of King Henry VIII to get a divorce, which the Pope wouldn't grant to him. It was a long time before the English Church was anything but a Catholic Church which didn't recognize the supreme authority of the Pope. In fact, during the remainder of Henry's lifetime, after he broke away from the authority of the Pope and had Parliament pass a statute making the king the supreme head of the British Church, nevertheless, for the rest of his lifetime, there was the death penalty for anybody who claimed that any of the doctrines of the Catholic Church were false. And a number of people were burned to death on that charge under Henry VIII. So when it came to the matter of translating, remember these were churchmen accustomed to using their Bibles written in Latin. Now, the name of our prophet here, Yah. I've separated the syllables so you can see what it's made up of. Eliyah. Literal translation, God is Yahweh. Now, a few writers have claimed that an alternative translation of it could be God himself, but they are taking extreme and unjustified liberties with the Hebrew language when they try to put that one over. I don't think you can make anything out of it except God is Yah. Now, Elijah appears suddenly in the Bible. No ancestry of his is given. He is simply called Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead. Gilead was a district east of the Jordan River. It was part of the area assigned to the tribe of Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh. It was the old territory of Ammon before the Israelites occupied it. The westerly side of the Jordan Valley has fairly steep slopes going down to this deep, narrow trench, which is the Jordan Valley. At the surface of the Dead Sea, it's about 1,300 feet below Mediterranean sea level, and the valley itself is only about 14 miles wide. So you can see that westerly side is rather steep. The easterly side goes up in gradual slopes. It had at that time at least some beautiful pasture land. You remember that is why the tribes of Reuben and Gad and half the tribe of Manasseh said, give us our inheritance on this side of the Jordan, because we have many cattle and here's beautiful pasture lands. Then, as it rises to the higher portion of the slope, going up to the high table land that turns to desert to the east, it was at that time at least, and is to some extent even today, quite well timbered, wild, beautiful country. So you had on the slope going up from the Jordan River, well-watered, fertile country, and then up at the top and where it began leveling off into this plateau, desert country. The exact location of this city, Tishbe, cannot now be determined. All the country in there is dotted with mounds which represent the ruins of ancient cities, and there are literally hundreds that archaeologists have not had the time and the money to excavate. So there are many of the ancient cities we can't now locate. So Elijah was a man of the desert solitudes, like John the Baptist. You remember, until John the Baptist started his brief active ministry, he also lived in the desert. And Elijah appears in the cities only briefly, and only when it's necessary for him to be there, and he goes back to the desert when his mission is accomplished. Now, his appearance, his first appearance, was just startlingly sudden. And the reason for it is obviously clear. I've told you what the conditions of general evil and misrule and chaos were up to that time. Now, Jezebel undertook to stamp out and obliterate all worship of Yahweh in the kingdom of Israel. There'd been many minor prophets of Yahweh in Israel who tried vainly to reform the nation. And when Ahab married Jezebel, she made murderous war against them, killing all that she could get hold of. Now, for a time at least, one loyal officer under Ahab succeeded in saving the lives of some hundred of these minor prophets. In 1 Kings 18, verses 3 to 4, we read, "And Ahab called Obadiah, which was governor of his house. Now Obadiah feared Yahweh greatly, for it was so, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of Yahweh, that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50s in a cave and fed them with bread and water." But apparently, even those couldn't be hid long, and a little bit later, even they were murdered, leaving Elijah alone, the one prophet of Yahweh in the northern kingdom of Israel. So his first appearance comes in most dramatically. It's 1 Kings 17, verse 1. "And Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, As Yahweh God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these 3 years, but according to my word." Now, today it's not easy to realize the courage it took to do that. In those days, there was no such thing as a trial for a man the king considered his enemy. He simply called one of his army officers and said, "Take some soldiers and go out and kill him." And that was done. So here comes Elijah with this threat. Now remember, they were not making their living as stockbrokers and electronic technicians and that kind of thing. This was an agricultural civilization. And you know what 3 consecutive years of drought can do to any agricultural area. Well, having thus declared war on idolatry, Elijah had to flee for his life. In the 17th chapter of 1 Kings, we're told about it. "And the word of Yahweh came unto him, saying, Get thee hence, and turn thee eastward, and hide thyself by the brook Cherith, that is before Jordan." Now that was in his home territory, Gilead. "And it shall be that thou shalt drink of the brook, and I have commanded the Arabs to feed thee there." Your Bible says the ravens. Well, as I've explained to you before, in the Hebrew alphabet, the consonant letters are relatively large and are written on the line. The vowel letters are little things about the size of periods and commas and that sort of thing, and written under the line. And the very slight slip of a pen or the pen running out of ink just a little bit early can change one of these vowels into another. And an error making a change in one vowel changed it from Arabs to ravens. But you'll find that the best authorities are all in agreement that God said, I have commanded the Arabs to feed thee there. Where ravens would pick up a supply of bread and meat twice a day is not explained, but the Arabs would have it. So he went and did according to the word of Yahweh, for he went and dwelt by the brook Kerith that is before Jordan. And the Arabs brought him bread and flesh in the morning, and bread and flesh in the evening, and he drank of the brook. And it came to pass after a while that the brook dried up, because there had been no rain in the land. And the word of Yahweh came unto him, saying, Arise, get thee a Zarephath, which belongeth to Sidon. That was on the Mediterranean coast, you see. And dwell there. Behold, I have commanded a widow woman there to sustain me. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, the widow woman was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, Fetch me, I pray thee, a little water in a vessel that I may drink. And as she was going to fetch it, he called to her and said, Bring me, I pray thee, a morsel of bread in thine hand. And she said, As Yahweh thy God liveth, I have not a cake, but a handful of meal in the barrel and a little oil in the cruse. And behold, I am gathering two sticks, that I may go in and dress it for me and my son, that we may eat it, and then die. And Elijah said to her, Fear not. Go and do as thou hast said, but make me a little cake thereof first, and bring it to me. And after that, make for thee and thy son. For thus saith Yahweh, God of Israel, The barrel of meal shall not waste, neither shall the cruse of oil fail, until the day that Yahweh sendeth rain upon the earth. And she went and did according to the saying of Elijah, and she and he and her house did eat many days, and the barrel of meal wasted not, neither did the cruse of oil fail, according to the word of Yahweh, which he spoke by Elijah. Now the Bible emphasizes in many places, if you want your prayers to be answered, if you want favors from God, it's up to you to believe him. If you pray now, Lord, I have need of this, and I know you're able to do it for me, but I don't trust you. I don't think you're good enough to do that for me. What kind of an answer do you expect to get? You have to show your confidence in him, your reliance upon him. So do you notice what Elijah did? He said, You make me a little cake of bread out of this meal first. Then make for yourself and your son. She did. And everything happened as Elijah had said. The supply never failed. Well, 3 years of solid drought continued and brought complete disaster to the kingdom of Israel. And it didn't produce any repentance on the part of Ahab. It produced murderous rage on the part of Jezebel and even a certain amount of the same on the part of the weakling King Ahab. So the Bible tells how Ahab was making a last desperate effort to save the horses and mules by finding some pasture for them. Presumably, the cattle and sheep had all been eaten already. Why try to save the horses and mules? Because, of course, they were always in danger of military attack by other kingdoms. And what are you going to mount your cavalry troops on? So he was trying to save them. The 18th chapter of 1 Kings tells the incident, and it's quite dramatic. And it came to pass after many days But the word of Yahweh came to Elijah in the third year, saying, Go show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. And Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab, and there was sore famine in Samaria. And Ahab called Obadiah, which was the governor of his house. And Ahab said unto Obadiah, Go into the land, unto all the fountains of water, and unto all brooks. Perhaps we may find grass to save the horses and mules alive, that we lose not all the beasts. So they divided the land between them to pass throughout it. Ahab went one way by himself, and Obadiah went another way by himself. And as Obadiah was in the way, behold, Elijah met him. And he knew him, and fell on his face, and said, Art thou my lord Elijah? And he answered him, I am. Go, tell thy lord, behold, Elijah is here. And Obadiah said, What have I sinned, that thou wouldst deliver thy servant into the hand of Ahab to slay me? As Yahweh thy God lives, there is no nation or kingdom whither my lord hath not sent to seek thee. And when they said, He is not here, he took an oath of the kingdom or nation, that they found thee not. And now thou sayest, Go, tell thy lord, behold, Elijah is here. And it shall come to pass, as soon as I am gone from thee, that the Spirit of Yahweh shall carry thee whither I know not. And so when I come and tell Ahab, and he cannot find thee, he shall slay me. And Elijah said, As Yahweh of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, I will surely show myself unto him today. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him. And Ahab went to meet Elijah. Now the first time 3 years before, Elijah went to King Ahab with his message. Unless you reform, disaster. Because there will be no rain nor dew these 3 years, except as I give the word. This time, Elijah didn't go to Ahab. He made Ahab come to him. By this time, Ahab was beginning to know who was boss. And it came to pass, when Ahab saw Elijah, that Ahab said unto him, Art thou he that troubleth Israel? And he answered, I have not troubled Israel, but thou and thy father's house, in that ye have forsaken the commandments of Yahweh, and hast followed the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and all the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the groves, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table. So Ahab sent unto all the children of Israel, and gathered the prophets together into Mount Carmel. Now, he was away from Jezebel now, so he didn't have to jump when she cracked the whip. This looked reasonable. He was willing to take a chance on it, because not only the horses and mules, but the people were on the verge of death by starvation. And Elijah came unto all the people and said, How long halt ye between two opinions? If Yahweh be God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. And the people answered him, Not a word. Do they ever? Has there ever been a time in history when the great mass of people ever had enough character to take a stand on one side or the other of a matter of principle? No. You remember the Bible reminds us, many are called, but few are chosen. And history shows you why. Then said Elijah unto the people, I, even I only, remain a prophet of Yahweh. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Therefore, give us two bullocks, and let them choose one bullock for themselves, and cut it in pieces, and lay it on wood, but put no fire under it. And I will dress the other bullock, and lay it on wood, and put no fire under it. and call ye on the name of your gods, and I will call on the name of Yahweh. And the God that answers by fire, let him be God. And all the people answered and said, it is well spoken. Well, this was something they could understand. Here was a good sporting spectacle that they could watch for a thrill. And anyway, something of that sort they could understand. If one of these gods could send down fire from heaven, why, that would indicate which they ought to recognize. So it was done. The people gathered there, great numbers, and the priests of Baal first made ready their sacrifice in the morning. There were many of them, and they made quick work of it. They set up an altar, put the kindling wood on it for the fire, the pieces of the slain and cut up bullock on that. Then what? Well, from morning until, it says, midday was passed. In other words, about 3 p.m. The priests of Baal called in vain upon Baal. They put on their religious dances. No reply. They resorted to a more desperate measure that they used occasionally. They cut themselves with knives till they were all bloody. Nothing happened. Meanwhile, Elijah mocked them before the assembled people. Here was a good chance to show the people, you've been worshiping Baal. Now see how useless it is. 1 Kings 18, verse 27. And it came to pass at noon that Elijah mocked them and said, cry aloud, for he's a god. Either he's talking, or he's out hunting, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. So they kept up shouting their prayers, and nothing happened. Then at 3 p.m. began the time to prepare for the evening sacrifice. That was the time of day when the Passover lambs were killed. It was the time, likewise, of the death of Jesus Christ on the cross later. So about 3 p.m., Elijah went to work. He made an altar by rolling together 12 rough stones. Now, the people of Israel had been warned in Exodus 20, verse 25, when they made an altar, it should be only of rough stone, not carved and dressed stone. God said, when you lift up a chisel upon it, you have polluted it. So, he rolled together these 12 stones to form an altar. Then he dug a trench around it and piled wood on top of this altar, and on the wood, the pieces of the sacrifice. Then he had all this drenched with 12 barrels of water, which soaked and saturated the sacrifice and the wood for the fire, and even filled up the ditch around the altar. He was going to make this a good demonstration. 1 Kings 18, verses 36 to 40, tells you of the result. And it came to pass, at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice, that Elijah the prophet came near and said, Yahweh, God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Yahweh, hear me, that this people may know that thou art Yahweh God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Then the fire of Yahweh fell from heaven, and consumed the burnt sacrifice, and the wood, and the stones, and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. You see, the fire of God is atomic fire. And just as a hydrogen bomb is hot enough to vaporize solid stone, that's what you had here. And when all the people saw it, They fell upon their faces and said, Yahweh, he is the God. Yahweh, he is the God. And Elijah said unto them, take the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape. And they took them. And Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slew them there. Now, he didn't write a philosophical treatise about it. He didn't leave us one written word. But he did what needed to be done.